Hey, you guys, what's going on? It's the movie retrospective. Talking about a really, really good, man, I hadn't seen this in such a long time. I saw it like a long time ago and, you know, several times, and it was one that me and my friends used to watch all the time, but I hadn't seen it for many years, and I was like really, really excited to watch it again. And
yeah, it's a masterpiece.
I mean, it's like so much, so much better. I forgot how good it was. Like, I remembered it was good, but I forgot like how good it was. This is One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest from 1975.
Yeah.
Now, I had also read the book. The novel is actually by Ken Kesey, and it came out, I think, in the early 60s. I want to say it was like 1962 that the book came out. And the book, it kind of has a lot of the same events in it that happened in the movie, but the big difference between the book and the movie, I feel like, is that the book is actually told from Chief's point of view. And Chief is actually has some mental issues, you know what I mean? So he has like a lot of weird like delusions about being like part of a machine that's like controlling everyone's lives and stuff like that. Like, he has like some kind of schizophrenic like ideation. So I don't know. I kind of feel like they're two different things. Like I said, they're kind of like the same story, but I kind of think it was a good idea to like go with a more, like, they didn't necessarily make Chief, like, a background character. Well, I guess they did kind of make him a background character in the movie, but he ends up being kind of, like, the most important character, like, toward the end. So I thought that was, like, a good compromise.
Yeah, well, now you tell me that, then you can interpret the story as him being the main character.
Yeah, that's true.
And he's watching all this happens, and it inspires him to escape.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that you're not getting any of his internal dialogue.
Right.
You know, but you can interpret it that way, because the ending, he goes, I'm not leaving you here, you're coming with me. You know what I mean? It is a big spiritual thing where he takes what's his name?
McMurphy.
McMurphy's soul with him, because he wouldn't leave him stranded, because he says, I'm as big as a mountain now, and it's because of everything that he saw McMurphy do. So, yeah, no, he could be the main character. It's just that he had everybody fooled, remember?
Yeah, that's right.
McMurphy says, man, you got them all fooled. They think you're deaf and dumb. And he's like, yeah. First thing he says, puts it, juicy fruit.
Well, he says thank you first.
He says thank you, then he says juicy fruit. Yeah, so, you know. Yeah, you can interpret it that way. That's one way of telling it. Just like in The Shining, which this he must have gotten The Shining gig on the back of this. Wouldn't you think?
Who, Jack Nicholson?
Yeah.
Because I guess so, yeah.
Being a crazy motherfucker, what he's doing in this one, but he's funny.
I kind of feel like, because he'd been in movies prior to this, but I think he was 37 when this movie was made. Yeah. And I kind of feel like this is the first time he'd played a character quite like this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's just like in The Shining. You can interpret The Shining movie as everything you see in the movie. That's in the book. That would have been Wendy's, kind of like Wendy's point of view. It is the book, Shining. It's just a slightly different point of view. Well, okay, I hadn't read this book, but based on what you said, no, you could interpret this movie as being accurate to the books, just a different point of view.
Yeah.
Not getting the damn internal dialogue of fucking Chief's mental problems, because he got out of that. He broke out of that, evidently.
And we remember, we were trying to like remember like when we were watching the movie last night, because one of the big kind of plot points in the movie is that most of the men that are on the ward are there voluntarily.
Yeah.
And so we were trying, and you know, Randall McMurphy, who is, you know, Jack Nicholson's character, you know, he was one of the few that was actually like made to go there. But Chief was another one that was committed.
He was committed.
Yeah, he did.
His escape was real.
Yeah, he actually did, yeah.
Okay.
So it's kind of interesting, because all the guys that were there, all the rest of the guys pretty much, I think there was maybe one other one that was committed, but all the other guys that are kind of like the main characters in the movie, they were all there voluntarily.
Yeah, they wanted to be there.
And they, yeah.
They could be guilt-tripped into staying there, which is one of the reasons why this movie builds up the way it is, because McMurphy takes this young guy under his wing, who's played by Brad Dourif, who's really being, he's there voluntarily. But he's being held there basically by evil women. One of them is his mom, and the other one is Nurse Ratchet. And McMurphy hooks him up with a girl and everything. McMurphy loans him his girlfriend for the night.
Although I kind of thought, I kind of felt like Candy was just like a prostitute that he knew, not necessarily his girlfriend.
He said it was a friend of his. They were all going to escape together. She's a good friend of mine.
I think that he just told him that, like, yeah, just maybe. Because. Maybe. I think she was the hooker.
Yeah, well, I think they were, but I think he knew them, remember? Because she was laughing, and it's like they knew, you know, like
she knew
each
him.
Other.
Yeah, she knew him a long time, but like I said. You know what's interesting is
but
that...
he didn't get any.
Yeah.
I don't think McMurphy got any. He loaned her to the Brad Dourif character, who was like this love-starved fucking kid, you know what I mean? And
this is Brad Dourif's first movie, actually. Yeah, and he's great in this.
Right. He had never been with a woman. And then Nurse Ratched came out there and guilt-tripped the hell out of him, which caused him to kill himself. And fucking McMurphy loses it.
Yeah.
And fucking tries to strangle out. She was trying to choke that bitch out because she was mean, man. She was mean. She was a psycho herself. Ratched.
She's
just using power.
Do like the way that she's portrayed in this movie, though, because I kind of feel like Louise Fletcher, she actually got an Oscar for this. Actually, I think Jack Nicholson got an Oscar. Yeah. This was actually one of only three movies in the history of Oscars that got all five, like the big five.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like best film, best director, best lead actor, best lead actress, and what was the other thing? Best screenplay? I can't remember. But yeah, it won like the big five that they call it. And the other two, if in case you were curious, were It Happened One Night from 1934 and Silence of the Lambs from 1991. But I like the way, in the book, I kind of feel like, you know, it's been a long time since I read the book, but the book is kind of a lot more, I don't want to say it's necessarily like gendered, but it's a lot more like misogynistic in the way that it approaches Louise Fletcher's character, like Nurse Ratched. And one of the things, they don't do this in the movie, which was probably like a good, you know, idea, but in the book, he doesn't just like try to choke her, but he like tears her her uniform open so everybody can see her tits.
Yeah.
And after that, you know, nobody takes her seriously anymore because it's like, we saw her tits, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's a lot more like kind of like sexual against her.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like in the movie...
That's what they would have done, though.
They kind of toned it down. Yeah. And the interesting thing is that Louise Fletcher was so good in this because she's just like so... Like her facial expressions are so scary. And the great thing about her is that she's like the antagonist. She's like the villain. But... you can almost kind of, like, understand, like, why she has certain ways that she's... Because she's not, like, outright villainous at first, but the way that she goes about it is, like, really, really, like, passive-aggressive at first.
Yeah.
And she doesn't really, like, start to lose her cool until, like, later on. But she has kind of, like, a sadistic side to her. Because it's, like, you can tell... You know, at the beginning of the movie, you could kind of argue, yeah, well, maybe she actually does think she's just doing her job, and she does think that she's actually, like, helping these people, and she cares about helping them. But I kind of feel like that point is crossed when, you know, her and Randall McMurphy are, like, at odds all the time because she's very much an agent of order, and he's very much an agent of chaos, and she doesn't like it. So they're kind of at loggerheads. But then, like, she has an opportunity, like, at that meeting where, like, all the other hospital administrators are like, you know, maybe he's not crazy. We could just send him back to the work farm because he's faking it. And she's like, no, I think we should keep him.
Well, she wanted on. Power over.
That's what I mean. Yeah. So it's like, if she was actually cared about any of her other patients or anything like that, she's like, yeah, get rid of him. He's like a bad influence. But she didn't. She's like, no, I want him to stay here because I want to fuck him over more.
What the movie is showing is that Nurse Ratched and that institution's fucking restrictive policies were not helping those guys. They were making them worse. All right. McMurphy goes in there to lighten up the mood and give these guys adventure, give them men's culture, try to sneak them out, fucking take them on fishing trips and shit. And that was actually helping them. And she didn't like that. So she had to stop that. So she wasn't about helping the people.
Yeah.
And the Brad Dourif character, once she busted him for having sex with that woman, which was totally normal. You know, and she fucking went all psychosexually sadistic on him, you know, about his mother and shit like that, tried to shame him. And that would, in McMurphy's mind, not only did he try to kill her, he would try to damn expose her, you know, as being, you know, fucking fucked up, sexually fucked up. So in the book, that would have made sense to try to fucking defrock her, basically. It's literally embarrassing somebody means to pull their pants off. You're showing the bare ass. They used to do that shit in the medieval era. Embarrassing a motherfucker. After that, you couldn't take him seriously.
But I kind of like...
that's what they're doing.
I mean, I kind of... in the context of the book...
He's taking her power.
Right, it worked. But I think, like, in the movie, they did it a little more, bit more elegantly because he kind of chokes her out. And then, like, in the next scene, like, you see her with the thing around her neck and her voice is kind of taken away. Yeah. And I kind of feel like her voice was her power.
Yeah.
You know, at least in the context of the movie. So the fact that she's, like, kind of like... kind of has to talk like that and no one's really listening to her anymore. So it's kind of like the same kind of
Murphy
thing.
Tried to kill her.
Oh, he did, yeah.
To avenge the death of
because
of that
he blamed
boy.
Her.
He blamed her.
Yeah.
She was guilty.
Yeah, she was responsible for that.
She did that.
Big time.
And because of that, you know, spoiler alert, they lobotomize fucking McMurphy. And Chief didn't know it. He was waiting for, you know, he was waiting for McMurphy to come back out of punishment.
So they could escape.
So they could escape. And when he came back, he saw that he had been lobotomized. And he goes, I'm not going to leave you here like this. And then there's a really great scene, you know, I mean, there's all this damn tribal drums and nature sounds and shit. While he's smothering him, which, that's murder. He'd have gotten a life sentence for that. But he was in a mental hospital for life. So they couldn't do anything worse to him. All right. They really, because they just would have put him back in the mental hospital. But with the background behind the story, and background behind the story, and based on what he said, Chief was symbolically saving his soul and taking it with him to escape to freedom together. It was, and McMurphy would have wanted that.
And that's implied that like McMurphy was just like such a force of nature that he would not have wanted to be alive like that because
his soul had been stolen.
Right.
And the whole thing was a damn tragedy because McMurphy only had 68 days left. He thought he was just trying to get out of work detail.
He thought he only had
68 days. He was just trying to get out of work detail from 2-bit prison. All right, from 2-bit jail. I'm going to go to the mental hospital. I won't have to work there.
It'll be easier,
And then when he got there, he found out the policies change in the mental hospital. You're there for as long as they want you to be there.
If you're committed,
Which would be... And fucking the orderly said, no one's ever got out of here as a young man. You'll be old and gray by the time you get out of here.
So, I mean, you could argue that...
Damn near life sentence.
I mean, you could argue that, like, obviously Nurse Ratched is the villain of the piece, but
she
McMurphy...
gave him life, basically.
I mean, McMurphy kind of, like, brings on a lot of the stuff himself just by not really knowing...
Not knowing,
where he is now and, like, kind of, like, taking shit too far.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like at the end, you know, it was, like, cool that he, like, you know, hooked Brad Dourif's character up, you know, with a lady and everything like that, but... Probably, you know, kind of maybe getting Scatman Crothers fired.
Yeah.
Maybe like.
Scatman's in it, man. He does a great job in the movie.
You know what's funny is, like, I had forgotten.
There's another Shining crossover.
Well, I was just going to tell you that, like, not only because I forgot Scatman Crothers was in this, he plays a guy named Turkle who works there, like,
he's
on the night shift. He's like an orderly.
Yeah.
Do you know that one of the prostitutes, Candy, like the main one, that role was originally going to go to Shelley Duvall?
Okay.
More that would have been more Shining thing, but then it ended up like not being her.
Yeah.
But that's and interestingly too, I think that because they were considering Shelley Duvall, the director I think or the producer was watching a movie that Shelley Duvall had been in, like to see if she was right for the part. And that movie also happened to have Louise Fletcher in it, and that's how they said, "Hey, we need to get her for Nurse Ratched," because they'd had like some other actresses like try out for it, but Louise Fletcher ended up being like perfect in this because. And like I said, I like that she underplays it. She doesn't come across as overtly villainous. You know what I mean? And because a lot of the times, like, she just has that really, really stoic face. She doesn't really, like, lose her cool until the end. But I think if they had made her... Because the thing about it is, like I said, this is based on a novel. And then, like, in the... Like, 1963, 1964, they did a stage version. And I kind of feel like in the stage version, she was, like, a lot more overtly villainous, like, a lot more sadistic, like, openly. But I think it works better if it's like, underplayed because it seems more realistic.
First person to show me this movie is my high school buddy, Steve. Fucking, and we were about 17. We had the hots for fucking Nurse Ratched. We were like, talking about who was going to get a hand job from her and just weird shit like that. You know, but just that's just something teenage boys, but they're like that. It's fucking funny. But seeing her again, she is cute. She's cute in an icy, kind of fucking cold way, like a bitch.
Because, you know, man, her eyes are, great in this. Just, like, the way she stares at the people is just, like, fantastic. Like I said, she was in Flowers in the Attic, too, and she also plays, like, a villain.
Yeah, those hormones, though, we were still trying to get laid.
Well, that's just typical.
You know, that's with boys, you know.
they'll pretty much fuck anything that moves, that wanders
past.
Would you
give her head? I'd give her head. Talking shit. Which bet you she's pretty good. She'd probably ruin your hand job. Shit like that, you know. Fucking, that's how it is.
That's pretty hilarious.
Yeah, she'd ruin it.
But yeah, because I said, I hadn't seen this movie probably since the 90s. I kind of feel like that was the last time that I saw it.
Yeah.
And I had forgotten, I mean, I remembered that this was like an all-star cast, but I forgot that Brad Dourif was in it. This was his first movie. This was Christopher Lloyd's first movie.
Danny DeVito was in it.
Actually, Danny DeVito was in an off-Broadway production of it playing that same character,
dude,
which is why
Hills
they wanted
Have
him back.
Eyes, the dude looked,
Michael Berryman, and he might not be credited because he doesn't talk. He's only he was in the background of one scene, and I think there's just a scene of Jack Nicholson looking at him for a minute because I'm like, that's Michael Berryman.
Scatman Crothers.
Scatman Crothers is in it.
Never saw the actor that played Chief again. It's the only movie I've seen him in.
No, he's been in tons of stuff. Will Sampson. This was actually his first movie too. Yeah. He got discovered. This is a funny story. So the original stage production.
Oh, wait a minute. He was in Outlaw Josie Wales, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think he was.
Yeah,
I think he was.
There's iron in your words. Yeah, okay, yeah, that was him.
He's been in a fuck ton of stuff.
Yeah.
Dude's 6'7".
Yeah.
So there's a funny story behind how he got to be in this movie. So like I said, there was, the book thing, and then there was the stage adaptation. Now, Kirk Douglas, back in the 60s, played the Randall McMurphy role on stage. And so he had the rights to the book, and he'd been wanting to make a movie, with him starring in it. But it took so long for the movie to get made that by the time that he got the movie made, he was too old. So by that point, he had sold the rights to Michael Douglas, his son. So they put, Jack Nicholson in it too. And they were like, okay, so we need somebody to play Chief. And they're like, we just need a big motherfucker, a big Native American.
Big Indian guy,
And it's like, and they're like, yeah, there's obviously not that many. Well, one, there wasn't that many Native American actors just in general. And there weren't any big, huge ones.
Yeah, and luckily the dude has got a classic face. His profile is strong nose and everything. He looks good.
So Michael Douglas happened to meet this dude on a plane who owned a used car lot. Now, this guy also appears in the movie as the guy that's the harbor master when they steal the boat. And this guy said, wherever his used car dealership was, they had a lot of Native American customers because it was near a reservation or something. Mm-hmm. And 6 months after he had met Michael Douglas on the plane, he called up and he's like, I just saw the biggest fucking Indian. And they were came in here and bought a car. Yeah. And so he gave him his name and that's how he ended up in the movie. And I think this was his first movie and he's fucking great in it.
Yeah,
but because he's just, like I said, he's the main character of the book. He's the POV character. So in this one, like I said, they kind of put him in the background a little bit, but he's always watching kind of all the shenanigans.
He kind of has his own backstory in the movie. He watched his dad try to suck on a bottle, but the bottle was sucking on him until he became yellow and shriveled. He was the size of a mountain when he started and wheeled him down to nothing, and that was bothering him. And he, Chief was talking about it. He says, man, you're big. You're big as a tree. You're big as a mountain and all that. You know, and he goes, I don't feel that way on the inside. But all this adventures that he went on, he watched MacReady go through.
McMurphy.
McMurphy go through all these adventures. Even escape one time when they were going to open a damn gate anyway. That was some funny shit.
Yeah, he climbed over the.
Fence.
Well, I think
they
he wanted to climb over earlier so he could get in the bus.
I guess
before they
maybe.
Saw him.
Maybe
I think that's what he was doing.
Maybe that's what it was. So he could steal the bus. But it was just, there's all these little funny things that McMurphy does that takes Chief out of his shell. You know what I mean? And in the end, before he realizes McMurphy has been lobotomized, he says, let's go, man. I'm as big as a mountain now, you know? And
yeah, because he made him feel, he was like an inspiration.
Yeah. So that's really kind of the story. That's really kind of the you know, it's kind of the meaning of this movie in a way, you know what I mean? That this guy had inspired these other dudes. Now, they find out why McMurphy's in prison. He didn't get very much time, but he was 38, and they asked him, says, what'd you do to get to prison? And he goes, had sex with this girl who was 15 going on, what'd he say, 38?
Something like that.
15 going on 35, and he just said, you know, and she told me she was 18. But when it's just staring there in the face, man, you just can't resist, you know. So that's, he was in there for statutory rape.
Yeah, that's why he was.
Yeah, underage, so, you know, girl.
And in the book, he's actually portrayed, they kind of toned this down a lot in the movie, which I'm kind of, again, kind of glad they did. But yeah, in the book, he comes across more as like a Christ-like figure. Like, there's a lot of Christ
imagery,
allegory and imagery and stuff, yeah, like that. Which, like I said, kind of makes sense because you're seeing things from Chief's point of view. And Chief kind of sees him as a savior figure in a way. And also, I think it's clear, and I think this was probably like good for the adaptation too, because in the book, it's pretty clear that Chief is crazy. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, he's got some problems.
Yeah, Chief's mentally ill.
Yeah, but yeah, in the movie, he seems like okay. You know what I mean? He doesn't seem like he'd bust out of the place and like be a serial killer or nothing like that. He seems, yeah, like he's...
Well, you don't know what's the his internal systems are. He just comes off real silent and shy. But you could say that you know, if you told me that in the book he's like, you know, he's schizophrenic and he's got this internal world, I'd say, oh yeah, Paul. Yeah, he's in there.
He's got like all kind of like conspiratorial like, right, ideation, like everybody's out, like, right, everybody's mechanical and,
yeah,
they're all like, all these machines are like out to, yeah, get him and stuff like
what's
that.
What's going on? He's not evil though. He's
no,
just mentally ill.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
he overcomes it in the end after he takes a McMurphy soul and saves it. He goes and does what McMurphy can't do and pull that big old damn sink looking thing.
The hydrotherapy
out of the
like
ground
thing.
And carry it across and throw it through the damn wall and make a big hole, and he just runs out.
And everybody's like, yeah!
Yeah!
You just see like he got
his
out.
Figure running off into the darkness.
Yeah, it's, yeah, really good. Well, because the thing about it, I kind of feel like the implication of the movie is that particularly this one scene, which is like a great scene that a lot of people talk about, like where they have the big Christmas party, like he sneaks in all the booze, he sneaks in the two women, and they're just having like a grand old time, like they pay off Scatman Crothers so they can like party on the ward.
Yeah.
And so they do that, and there's a scene like kind of toward when it's getting like really, really late at night. Everyone's kind of drunk and laying around and singing or whatever. And the whole point of the party was supposed to be, it was this big party. It was going to be their goodbye party.
Yeah,
like Randall McMurphy, yeah, and Chief were going to escape.
Yeah.
But then he gets convinced to stay. He's like, you know, I really want to give Billy, which is Brad Dourif's character, yeah, like, you know, let him have sex with a girl because he never had.
Yeah.
So there's a great shot of like Jack Nicholson just sitting, yeah, and you can see all these emotions like going over his face. Like he knows I could be escaping right,
yeah, but
now.
But he's not escaping. It's funny.
But I'm not escaping because, yeah, it's like I want. So it's almost kind of like
self-sacrificing.
Right. That's what, yeah, I'm saying. So when he first gets to the hospital, he's just like fucking around. He just didn't want to be on the work detail at prison, and he thought, yeah, this would be easier. So he was faking being crazy so he would get sent to the hospital. But the longer he's there, the more he actually starts to connect and like care about these guys.
Yeah.
And it's almost like he has the opportunity to leave and he doesn't, even though he knows that it's going to end, yeah, badly for him.
Yeah, he's sitting there and you can tell he's kind of looking a little worried. And in the background, you hear the sound of a train, a distant train. Leaving.
Yeah.
Like his opportunity.
There it
goes.
Yeah.
Because he was in prison. He didn't get a long time. You know what I mean? He was going to get out eventually anyway. He was not a predatory guy. He was popular with women and it was real charismatic. He had girlfriends and stuff. So it's not like he was some kind of child predator. It's just he got into a bad situation. She told him he was 18, and according to him. And
I was like, that's what they all say.
Because she was willing. She was willing, and I just couldn't say no. You know what I mean? Fucking. And he was kind of a party animal, you know, wild man, you know, and but he wasn't trying to hurt anybody. He was just having a good time. And when he was in that negative environment, the only way he could fight back was to try to lighten everything up and kind of make fun of stuff and be defiant and come up with a different plan and let's escape and go fishing, you know. And it was helping these guys.
Yeah, because those guys hadn't been committed. They were just there because they're kind of like saying they were just there because they were like afraid of life. You know, maybe that's kind of what they were.
He wanted to see
at.
The World Series. He couldn't get him to vote on it. You know, and fucking. And he's telling Ratchet that's therapy. You know, there was a disagreement about over what therapy was.
Right.
Her therapy was bashing dudes and getting and trying to guilt trip them and get them to talk about their problems and. And you can see, you know, and it wasn't just McMurphy that didn't fly. He didn't believe in this shit. It was the dude that played the Doc from fucking Back to the Future. What was that character?
Christopher Lloyd, yeah.
Christopher Lloyd's. What was his character's name? Do you remember?
I can't remember.
Because he stood up and goes, this is ridiculous. Remember that? Because he said, stop attacking people and why are we doing this, you know? Because he was sane enough to know that this wasn't therapy.
Yeah, because the thing about it, it's like, that's what I think was so insidious about Ratchet's character was that, you know, doing those talk therapy sessions, that is actually helpful, like, for certain people's mental illnesses and stuff like that. But the way she did it...
She was cruel.
She was just, like, getting them to say, like, their most, you know, vulnerabilities and stuff like that. So she could use that later on, like, to fuck with them and get them to do what she wanted them to do.
Which in the book...
She wasn't trying to help them.
Which would, in the book, make sense where he tried to expose her physically. Trying to do the same thing that she was... Trying to get vengeance for what she was doing to the guys.
Yeah.
Trying to expose them. Because she went after Billy's fucking sexual inadequacies. Right in front of everybody else.
Yeah.
And then pulled his mama out. What would your mom think? And all kinds of shit. And he was real vulnerable to that. He was a bad stutterer and shit. And he killed himself over it. And
Murphy
couldn't control himself, man. He tried to kill her.
You know? Which, like I said, was kind of understandable in the moment. Because he really liked that kid.
Yeah.
And, you know, for a second, like, when Billy first gets brought out, like, when they catch him, like, in bed with the prostitute, like, you can tell that he's, like, real happy. And that's the only time he doesn't stutter. Like, he says a couple sentences and he doesn't stutter.
Yeah.
But the second that Ratchet starts talking to him again, he immediately, like, goes back and starts stuttering.
Yeah. Billy had this problem where if he just saw a woman, he loved her.
Yeah.
If he just saw her, he loved her.
Yeah.
He was one of those guys.
And, like, he wouldn't, like, tell her or, like, try to have a relationship. He would just keep it all to... And he would invent these whole entire, like, relationships, which, like I said, that's a problem.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? But I don't think... Like I said, it's kind of like when they do the therapy sessions and stuff like that, like, as an idea, that's actually a good idea and does help people, like, talking about their problems. But that wasn't the reason why she was doing
it. No, she was sadistic.
Yeah. And she was even...
about power.
She was even getting all over that one guy's case. Now, I don't think they say this outright. Like, the one guy where they were talking about, like, that thought he was smarter than everybody else, you know, that guy?
Yeah.
I thought the implication was that guy was supposed to be gay... Mm-hmm. And that's why he was in there because they were talking about like her talking about like his inadequacies with his wife and with you know and all this other kind of stuff.
Yeah, they did some gay jokes.
I thought that was the implication that's why he was in there because he was like closeted.
Yeah,
I mean they didn't really say that outright.
He was in there voluntarily though.
Pretty much all of them were.
Yeah.
Other than McMurphy and Chief, and I think there was one other guy. It might have been Christopher Lloyd's character. No, I don't think it was.
No.
I think there was one other guy, but it wasn't like one of the main guys.
Because he started teasing them. You guys can leave at any time, and you're in the.
Yeah, because he didn't know that.
Right.
Like as soon as they told him that, he's like,
"You guys can leave," and then you let me fucking
like fuck around
and get in trouble in front of her and all this time. I didn't know that I'm here for life now. You know, basically.
Yeah, because well, they were just kind of like cheering him on, I guess, because he was doing what they couldn't do, like stand up to her.
I was fucking with Nurse Ratchet. I can get in trouble now. I didn't know.
Yeah, and I could just be in here forever.
He thought he was only had 38 days.
Yeah, or 68 days. Yeah. Well, like, but even before that, he got electroshock therapy. Like before, you know what's interesting? This, you know, where they shot this in an actual mental hospital. Not only an actual mental hospital that's still around, although those buildings are gone, like the original buildings, but it was the exact mental hospital that the book was set in.
Okay. Well, it's definitely not a set.
Yeah, it's definitely not. Like I said, that hospital is actually, it's in Oregon. It's still open, but those buildings are not, you know, they've been torn down because they were old. But that hospital is actually still in operation nowadays. And they said, too, that before they shot it, like Louise Fletcher and Jack Nicholson, they actually took them, like they took the whole cast and crew and like they stayed on the wards and like they shadowed some of the other patients. Some of them like slept in the hospital, like on the wards at night, and some of the patients like kind of mixed in with the crew, like so they could interact with everybody so they'd get an idea. And also Jack Nicholson and Louise Fletcher went and actually saw one of the patients getting electroshock.
Yeah.
So they would know like what it was like.
It's a masterpiece movie.
It really is. I forgot.
If you haven't seen it, you're cheating yourself. If you're a fan of The Shining and you haven't seen this, you're cheating yourself. It's a very different kind of movie, but equal quality. It's kind of almost like a war movie in a way. It's a bunch of guys who are battling the system, and a couple of them end up being heroes. And one of them, McMurphy's a tragic hero, all right? But then Chief is kind of like the hero at the end. Because he saves, and it's a lot of it's symbolic.
Yeah.
But he saves McMurphy and escapes. He saves his soul and escapes.
Yeah.
And it's a good flick.
And I mean,
you can learn a lot from it.
And it's, yeah. I think it's a perfect balance too between being funny and like entertaining and being also tragic. Being sad, because like the end of this is like really, really sad.
Yeah, the acting style is realism. Everybody talks over one another. It's kind of like Alien 1, where it just feels real fluid when they're in the Nostromo. It just feels very natural through almost all of it. And just the way it's shot kind of feels Kubrickian in certain ways when it was shot, which is kind of Spartan in certain, but it's supposed to be. You're in a mental institution. But then they get out. It's good. It's good. It's a good movie. I can see why a lot of this influenced. I can see the influence in The Shining.
Yeah.
With the cast and everything.
And I feel like this movie is, like, so iconic, too, because, I mean, especially, like, the whole scene at the end with, like, Chief, like, tearing that hydrotherapy thing, like, out and busting out of the thing.
Yeah,
like,
the heroic music.
That's been done on The Simpsons and, like, a whole bunch of other, like, kind of stuff where they did that. It's been referred to a bunch of times.
Yeah.
And also, like, the camera work is interesting, too. I think the camera work is different whenever they're shooting Ratched versus you know, whenever they're shooting like McMurphy. Like when they're shooting him, it's a lot more kind of fluid and action based and like wild and everything, because he's almost kind of like, he, I don't want to say like noble savage, but he's kind of like portrayed as that kind of character. Ooh. Like McMurphy's kind of character. Yeah,
kind
of. So he's kind of like a more primitive maybe or something like that, whereas she's just very like austere and upright, and she's kind of like cracking down on everybody because she's like the order, the system, the man, you know what I mean?
You can see how he ended up as Jack Torrance in The Shining, who was another lunatic, really.
Yeah.
But a darker version.
Yeah.
Fucking, you know, Jack Torrance, when he lost it, he fucking lost it. This guy's just pretending to be crazy, but he is crazy.
You know, in a certain way.
He's a wild man.
He's not technically mentally ill,
but he's just a wild card, you know, and
yeah, he's an agent of chaos, like I said, which is why Ratched can't, because he's kind of like fucking up her whole little like structured kingdom that she's got all sorted out.
He's a good guy, though.
Yeah.
You know, he cares about people, he's got compassion and has a sense of right and wrong, and he sees the abuses that are happening inside this system and then tries to avenge the death of an innocent, you know, a person that literally that dude was an innocent.
Yeah,
he was
I mean, he was a kid. But God, Brad Dourif was like a fucking baby in this. I forgot he was that young.
He was a kid with a mental problem who had done no wrong. Really, he wasn't really capable of doing wrong. He didn't have enough force of will. He was real submissive, and you know, she killed him, basically.
That was kind of like the final straw.
Yeah, she killed him just by psychosexual abuse, basically, by just shaming him in front of everybody.
Yeah.
And he cut his wrist.
Because knowing that that's... Well, he cut his throat.
That's right.
Well, because she knew how to get to every single person that was, like, on that ward. That was, like, part of her power. That's why she... You know, that's why she did those sessions, so she would have, like, shit so she could kind of, like I said, like, kind of push your buttons, like, later on.
So McMurphy was a hero, just a different kind of hero, unconventional. You know, we're not talking... And it is... Well, he is kind of a war hero, But this is a psychological war inside of a fucking mental institution.
Yeah. I forgot to say, too, that I think I've neglected to mention that this was directed by Miloš Forman, who also directed another one of my very favorite movies of all time, Amadeus, from 1984, which, that will always and forever be one of my favorite movies. But this, too, I mean, this is a completely different kind of movie than Amadeus, but, yeah, you can definitely see.
It is a psychological war movie. He even has them in a formation, remember? He was forming them up and calling them the, what is it? The mental gang.
Defectives or...
The defecto gang, the mental defecto gang or something, you know, and he's kind of... It's like his little personal army. He was helping them. And, of course,
he was bucking the system. Like I said, he was just trying to get them out of their shells and trying to get them out of their own way.
And get some of them to go home.
More than anything. It was kind of... It would be different if he came in there and there were actual, like, people with really severe mental illnesses that were criminally insane, and he was like, yeah, let's get out of here. Like, that would obviously be fucked up. But all of these guys, they were... You know, they had problems, but
they weren't that bad.
They weren't that bad.
Well, like, they had the catatonic all fucked up ones.
Right.
He goes, oh, we're not talking about them.
Yeah.
They don't count.
Yeah.
Basically. That's what he was... Remember, he told Nurse Ratched.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about them. They're...
Yeah, they didn't even know what was going on.
Yeah, you know.
Right.
Because they were just catatonic and standing there and didn't speak. And so they were kind of like the zombies.
Yeah. He wasn't trying to get them out. Right.
You couldn't do anything with them. He was talking about the ones that were... Could leave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That just kind of, like, needed to get their shit together a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, if you haven't seen this in a while, please, like, rewatch it, because I had not seen it since the 90s, and I forgot how good it was. How good, like, the ensemble cast is just, like, amazing. Like, everybody in this is good. The direction is good.
You could watch it 4 times in a row and probably pick up new things each time seeing it. It's detailed.
It is. It really is. And, so much went into it. And, like, I mean, just everything in this is amazing. Like, the acting performances are amazing. Like I said, and it's funny, but it's also, like, it's tragicomic. That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's, like, really, really sad at the end. But it's also, like, a little bit uplifting. The book is good, too, but it's a little bit... It's a kind of a different experience. Like I said, in the book, like, the events are mostly the same. But tonally and, like, in point of view, it's kind of different. So... You can kind of do both because they're different experiences, I feel like. But, you know. So, we watched this on HBO Max. If you don't have that, I'm sure you can find it somewhere else as well. But, yeah, this is just, like, a great film. And
it's
I'm
up there with The Shining in terms of quality and importance.
Yeah. This is, like, a hugely significant American film.
It's an important movie.
And I'm not surprised that it won, like, all 5 of the Oscars that year. Like I said, only the 3rd time that that's ever happened. So, and rightfully so, I feel like.
Classic storytelling.
Oh, yeah. It's great. It's great. So, so that'll do it for this movie retrospective. We will see you guys again on the next one. Bye.